Well, hello and welcome. Today is an amazing day to transform our thinking, our lives, and step into joy, abundance, and happiness like never before. If you just join me, I'm Ken D. Foster, and I am the host here of Voices of Courage. Welcome to you and everyone. Every one of us will experience loss. Sometimes it's loss of a loved one. Sometimes it's loss of a relationship, a career, our health, a dream. Sometimes it's somebody close to us. But all of us are going to go through loss. What if these endings aren't simply tragedies? What if these endings are really awakenings that we are being invited to step into? What if death of the ego, the identities, fears, and illusions we've carried throughout our lives is actually the beginning of a great freedom? You know, most of the time when we think of death, we think of loss. We think of grief. We think of anxiety maybe or stress. But today we're going to explore the deeper side of death. We're going to explore some of the mysteries of death, not only physical death, but also psychological and emotional deaths that occur throughout our lives. The death of certainty, the death of control, the death of old beliefs, old identities, old ways of living that no longer serve us. These moments can feel frightening, yet often they become the doorway to greater authenticity, compassion, wisdom, and love. Well, listen, few people have illuminated the journey with more clarity than my guest today. I'm going to bring him on. Gary Zukav, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Ken.
Those of you that don't know Gary, Gary is one of the world's most influential spiritual teachers and New York Times best-selling author of Seat of the Soul, the groundbreaking book that inspired millions of readers around the globe. His teachings on authentic power, emotional awareness, intuition, intention, and spiritual growth have truly transformed the way people understand themselves in our relationships and so much more. Gary, I'm really glad to have you here today. This is an important day for me, and you know, as you know, one of our good friends and one of my mentors passed today, so I think it's very timely that we're speaking about death.
Yes, Ken, death is always a timely topic, and I appreciate your saying all those beautiful things about me. Can you imagine why a book that I was part of writing could have become so popular so fast? The book is called The Seat of the Soul, and it millions of people have read it. Is it because I'm a brilliant writer? I'm a capable writer. I love writing, but that's not the reason. The reason is that there is a new consciousness that is emerging throughout the human species, and this book was about that. And that's why there was so much interest in it. And there still is interest in this new consciousness. And that's why I'm delighted. Delighted isn't the right word. Gratified. I'm enjoying, Ken, talking with you, because I feel that you're aligned with this new consciousness. And that's what I feel we will be exploring whenever we explore things like death, loss, tragedy. Because from the perspective of the new consciousness, these are all imagination. They don't really exist. So you can say, well, wait a minute. I mean, my grandmother just died. She's gone. And that hurts. Both of those are true. But what is it that's gone? From the perspective of the new consciousness, a life doesn't begin, a human life, doesn't begin at birth, and it doesn't end at death. From the perspective of the old consciousness, a life in your school is a book, and your birth is the beginning and your death is the end. But from the new consciousness, from that perspective, your life is a chapter in and the book belongs to your soul. And this chapter began when you were born. But what does that mean? From the perspective of the old consciousness, it means there's a random combination of genes and chromosomes and passion and or accident and whatever it is that brought parents together. From the perspective of the new consciousness, none of that is chance. All of it is meaningful, deeply meaningful. And your birth was the entrance into the earth world of an incarnation of an immortal soul. And that incarnation is you. It has your name, it has your birthday, it will have your death day. And the incarnation that is you will disappear. Ashes to ashes, dust to dust. But the energy that incarnated, the energy that animated that incarnation is immortal. Let's call it a soul, your soul. We can say you are a powerful and creative, compassionate and loving spirit. And at the same time, you are immortal. You are a mortal personality. This is itself the new consciousness. If I ask somebody with the new consciousness, are you more than a body and a mind? I'll ask you, Ken, are you more than a body and a mind?
Much more, yes.
It's rhetorical in your case. It's evident. And that's the case with billions of people now. If I ask that same question to someone with the old consciousness, are you more than a body and a mind? They'll look at me with puzzlement, if they're a kind person, and they'll say, what else is there? That's the difference between the old consciousness and the new. It is huge. It's as big as the difference between a planet and a galaxy. And there's no way that you can communicate, much less describe, an experience that you're having as a part of the new consciousness with someone who's still confined to the old consciousness. Because the old consciousness is limited to the perceptions of the five senses. And it understands power in the only way that it can, which is the ability to manipulate and control. And that understanding of power is more than obsolete. It's now toxic. It used to be our good medicine. Now it's poison. It's external power. And the pursuit of external power now produces only violence and destruction. These are the most important distinctions between the new consciousness and the old consciousness. And by the way, I would like to say at the outset that I don't expect anyone listening to believe what I am saying or sharing, or take it as so because I share it. In fact, I would suggest that you not do that with anyone just because they're a famous, they're an athlete, they're a movie star, they've got a big congregation. Instead, take anything that you resonate with into your life and try it out for yourself. See what it produces. And if you like what it produces in your life, experiment some more. And if you don't, nah, let it go. Don't try to wear a shoe that pinches. So what I'm sharing with you is my experience. It's what I know. But my perspective is a very small one. It's all from through the lens of the incarnation that is Gary Zukav. And in my case, I can share the highest reach, my best reach for the highest truth that I could attain or experience. And in my case, that reaches in included contact with the angelic world. But everyone's who is listening to this podcast is experiencing the new consciousness. And those who aren't. But this situation is temporary. Within the next generation and a half, I feel that everyone will be multisensory, the new consciousness.
The station that makes you feel good.
What if your healing journey could feel empowering, hopeful, even transformative? Welcome to the Alkaline Collective Mastermind, a community for anyone facing cancer, staying cancer-free, or committed to prevention. No matter your stage, whether you've chosen conventional care, an integrative path, or a fully holistic approach, here, you're not alone. Here, your healing journey becomes a journey of empowerment. We explore the science of oxygenation, metabolism, and alkalinity, while strengthening your emotional, spiritual, and physical well-being. This is a mastermind with heart, accountability, connection, wisdom, and real support. Because your journey isn't just about surviving. It's about thriving. Join us by clicking on the Alkaline Collective Mastermind banner on the UK Health Radio homepage or directly at alkaline-collective.com, where self-belief grows, healing deepens, and transformation begins.
Somewhere on Earth, there are 4 acres that belong to you. You don't need to be there in person, only there in purpose, protecting it, defending it, keeping it alive. Because the world doesn't need more good intentions. It needs more meaningful actions. Register your interest at 4acresearth.com.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
I think the old consciousness, if you're listening to this and you're wondering, well, am I in the old consciousness or the new consciousness? The old consciousness, and I just speak from my experience, left symptoms of stress, anxiety, health challenges, people coming into my life that were definitely not aligned with me, anger, resentment, living a life of fear and worry, concern, stress, always striving, pushing, driving, always trying to do the next thing, not feeling good enough ever. Those are symptoms of the old consciousness that I lived before I started to study self-realization and really realize what self-actualization, self-realization is about. And of course, it's from my point of view, it's this part where the ego must come under the control of the soul, as opposed to the flip side of that, where the ego is driving. Egos are usually fear-based, and from my point of view. And ego, it's nothing we can see, taste, touch, or feel. It's just that consciousness that we bring into this world that limits us tremendously. So I wanna kind of explore a little bit, Gary, to get to the consciousness that we're talking about, right? What does it take to get there? You know, and everybody's a little different here, but yeah, what's your experience?
It's a gift. You don't have to reach for it. You can't acquire it. You are it. It is emerging in billions of people. My guess would be about half of us. That would be 4 billion people. And when you have the new consciousness, well, I can say this, that all of those things that you talked about, anger, judgment, resentment, always striving, needing to get ahead, I feel it's more accurate to say these are parts of my personality. They're separate parts. From the old consciousness, a personality is a whole. Sometimes it's angry, sometimes it's happy. But from the new consciousness, you can see that your personality has many different parts. Some of them originate in fear. Those are the experiences, some of that you've mentioned, anger, jealousy, resentment, competitiveness, anger, overwhelm. And they all hurt. And if you act on them, they create consequences for you that hurt. And other parts of your personality originate in love. And these are the parts that we experience as gratitude, appreciation, caring, contentment, patience, awe of the universe. And the new consciousness allows us to see this and to, in seeing it, put an arm's length of distance between you and the part of your personality that's active. And in that distance, you can do something that you couldn't from the perspective of the old consciousness. You can choose. You can choose. The frightened parts of your personality are magnetic, attractive. The old consciousness was the consciousness of all of these experiences. And that's why it pursues external power. The new consciousness allows you choice, and that's where real power lies.
Are you saying when we are living from the aspects of the personality that you just described, that we're really not in choice? We're really in a place of what, pre-programmed response? Is that what you're saying here?
No, I'm as far as choice goes, I'm saying the opposite. That we are choosers. Our essence is choice. This is all from the new consciousness, and you have it. And we choose if we're going to act from anger, when we're angry, for example, or with understanding and patience while we're experiencing the anger. Now, that is the moment. That is the moment when power is created. There's only two tools, really, in creating authentic power: emotional awareness and responsible choice.
In the new consciousness, Gary, what my experience has been is that choice expands. And so choice may have been, in my old way of showing up, black or white. It's either this way or that way. And my experience has been that I have a lot more choice. Is that accurate? Is that what your experience has been? Or is there something that I'm not seeing here?
Yes and no. In my in this domain in which we're born, into which we're born, is a learning environment from my perspective. It's an environment of time and space and matter and duality and fear. And none of these things exist beyond this domain. Let's call this domain the Earth School, because there are things that we have to learn. And that's why we incarnated. We learn the most fundamental of all spiritual necessities, without which further development is not possible. That's choice. Our choice and our responsibility for what we choose. And we're in the Earth School to learn love, to learn to not to learn love that we stumble on or we find or we discover or it's given to us, but love that we choose. That is the potential, the shining potential of every moment in the Earth School now.
When this, so the Earth School brings up for me the reincarnation. And so it's in love does, love for me. I think when we started this, you know, there's no beginning, there's no end, but there is an evolution of the soul. And the soul comes back. If it didn't get its Earth School lessons, I think it's like, well, you might have to repeat the school again to understand. Is that accurate? Do you think that's accurate, Gary? Where are you with that?
From my experience, the soul isn't told to go back. You flunked a course. Okay. The soul wants to go back. The soul chooses to go back. That incarnation is a dramatic act of spiritual responsibility. Mm-hmm. And it's not a given for every soul that wants to return here. This is, as I grew up, I had lots of versions of the Earth School: prison, punishment, some kind of penal island that I was sentenced to. But I see that there is, that every experience that I've had, and I suggest this to everyone who's listening to us, that every experience you have serves a purpose, and that purpose is your spiritual growth.
Yeah. My father was a Los Angeles police detective for 48 years, And I would kid around and say, you know, I think I was paroled to him in this lifetime. The way I was as a kid, there's if you knew me as a kid, you know, there's probably some truth to that. Anyway, you know, this part with death. So we all, you know, we face sometimes death, emotional death, mental emotional death. We figured life was going a certain way, and this is how I'm feeling, and all of a sudden we realize that we got it wrong somehow, and so we have to let go. And sometimes letting go of something emotionally, or letting go the way we were thinking, or letting go of a loved one, it's sometimes very difficult for people. And people stay in this, I've watched people stay in, when they've lost a parent or a child, or physically somebody they love, watch them in this grief place for a long time. We're talking years in some cases. And it feels so unhealthy, not only for the person that's grieving, but I feel like for the soul that's left. Well, what's your take on that?
My most wonderful experience with love was with my partner, Linda Francis. We were together for 27 years, and it was unlike anything that I ever expected it to be. Before that, for the most part, I was addicted to sex, so I didn't really know anything about relationships, sex with women. And so I never really cared for the women I was having sex with, and they never cared for me. We were using each other. And but with Linda, from the very beginning, it was very different. After we were together for a little while, she was a chiropractor. She made herself into a chiropractor when she left her marriage and had two children to support and know as a girl, really, and never had any training. Her courage was enormous. But my experience with her was remarkable. I loved her completely, and I knew she loved me completely, and there was always that comfort and ease with us. She'd be in frightened parts of her personality now and then, and I would also, but they were just frightened parts of her personality that didn't ever bring up the question of whether we were together or would be together. And I thought our love was good. It was good like this. And then she had a stroke about 4 years ago. I was with her in the kitchen. She fell to the floor, and she said only one word, weak. She was trying to tell me, I fell down, I'm weak. I knew it was a stroke because I'd studied strokes. So I called 911. They were there within 10 or 15 minutes. They took her to the hospital, a regional medical center that had the ability to do a procedure called an endovascular thrombectomy. Normally, when a person has a stroke, if the clot, the block to blood, is not removed within 2 hours, there'll be permanent brain damage. With this process, that window is open to 24 hours. It's quite a difference. And that is the procedure that was offered by this large regional medical center 20 minutes from us. So Linda was taken there with sirens and lights and me right behind him. And the surgeon was in her room in the ER before I got there. He asked me for permission to do this procedure. I gave it to him. Yes, yes, please, please. And then he called me to a little room next to the operating room in about 20 minutes, and he said I couldn't do it. I couldn't do it. I said I tried to go in through her groin, which was the usual way to do the procedure, and he said I couldn't reach the clot. So then I went in through her wrist and over her shoulder. And so I still couldn't do it. I'm sorry. So I asked him, is there anything else you can do? And he said, there is an unconventional procedure. I'll do it if you ask me. And I said, please, please do it. He said, I can puncture her carotid artery. And Linda's clot was roughly where the third eye is, between her eyebrows. He did that procedure, and he said, I still couldn't reach the clot. He said, her arteries have twist in them. It's a particular kind of arterial architecture. And I pushed so hard that my device started to come loose from the sleeve. I couldn't push any harder. I'm sorry. So Linda was taken to an ICU room where the stroke unfolded, and I was with her. And I knew, and the nurses knew, and the doctors knew that there was nothing we could do while this stroke unfolded in my beloved's brain. And when I got back from the hospital the first day, everything was changed. Everything. Without Linda. And that night was the most difficult of my life. It was painful beyond what anything I could have imagined. I didn't know if I could live through it. I didn't want to. There were times when I asked, take me now, please. I'm going to die anyway. So take me now. But that gift was not given to me. And 2 days later, I was sitting by a little lagoon-type body of water, and something came to me. It was a realization. And it was, I don't have a reason for living anymore, except to love people. I might have said that before, but now it was so, and it is so, and it's permanent. So I'm sharing this because, and by the way, I was still in communication with Linda after her soul went home. So I was talking with her and yet missing her. It was a confusing time, but that's what was happening. I was aching for her physical presence. And I asked one of my teachers, we all have teachers, non-physical teachers, and we're becoming aware of them. The new consciousness allows that. And I said, why am I hurting so much? Well, first the teacher said, the thing for you to hold on to, Gary, is this. Linda is with you. And oh, did I hold on to that. And I said, well, why am I hurting so much? And he said, because frightened parts of your personality demand that the earth school be the way they want it to be, with Linda's physical presence in it. And you are experiencing the lack of the illusory comfort that you took and safety that you felt from her physical presence. So this brings us back to where I started this conversation for your question. Yeah. Grief. Oh, the grief lasted for years, 2 years anyway, maybe three. All that time I was speaking with Linda, and yet I missed her. Every molecule in me ached to feel her hand in mine. But I know now that I am who I am. I'm not at all who I was before this transformation happened, because of Linda's soul going home. So I am so grateful for that gift that her soul's going home gave me. And yet there were so many times that I wished I could be who I am now with Linda in the Earth School, but I couldn't, because it was her soul leaving that gave me this gift. So what I'm getting at, Ken, is this. Grief is an illusion. Loss is an illusion. From the perception of the new consciousness, we're beginning to see almost everything from a new perspective. For example, the perception of an other is an illusion. It's imagination. We're accustomed to thinking in terms of parts and relationships between them. But there have never been such things as parts. There is one, and all is that, and we are that. This is the new consciousness and where it's leading us.
with the new consciousness, and we're talking about the gift of death here, where you received that gift from Linda and was able to learn what you using to learn through this process, you still felt loss, you still feel grief, you still went through the emotions of it, even though it's an illusion. That illusion was very real for you.
Absolutely, it was. I didn't want to live anymore. Then that night, I pleaded for death twice. Please, please take me. And for 2 years after, I grieved for the presence that I was talking to every day. And what I am saying is, yes, it's an illusion. From one perspective, the entire Earth School is an illusion.
Right.
And it has a purpose. It is the densest, you might say, it is the densest expression of light, but it's holy, it's sacred. It is a precious place, this Earth School. And in it is grief. In it is anger and rage and lack of forgiveness. In it is overwhelm and anxiety and superiority and inferiority. And in it also are experiences of your soul. Those are the loving parts of your personality. And our purpose in the Earth School is to learn love. What is love? That's authentic power. Authentic power is love. There's no higher power. And for me, the only way I found to do that is to locate experientially, to experience intimately every part of my personality that prevents me from loving. And that means from giving the gifts that I was born to give.
You know, when I meditate, and you know, a lot of people reported this, there's a sense of connection to the oneness with the soul, and there's also a deep sense of peace, of bliss, and taking that experience out of a meditation into my world, into life. The things that would normally upset me or bring me anger or bring me rage seem not to be as important when I continue with that energy, that feeling that I just hold that consciousness in the world. And that love is, it's easy to spot when I'm in that place. It's easy to give. But not so much when I'm not in that place. Not so much when I'm in this delusion of this is the way it is, or you did this to me, or I said that to you. It's a very interesting place. And for me, I know, Gary, it's this place where I've practiced over the last 30 years to, I don't know if master the mind is the concept, but it's more of a observing the mind and allowing the mind to have whatever its thoughts are, but just being in a place where I don't have to choose that thought. I don't have to be in that place. I'd like you to speak to that a little bit.
You're speaking to it, Ken. In my opinion, everything you're saying is very beautiful, and addressing the most important experiences it's possible to have. From my experience, love in the Earth School is a domain of duality. Love is, and fear are the fundamental duality. And it's not possible to experience love when you're in fear, and the reverse. And to create authentic power requires experiencing a frightened part of your personality when it's active, in terms of your body and in terms of its thoughts, you might say somatically and cognitively. And somatically, it means put your attention in your throat area, your chest area, your solar plexus area. These are three of the seven chakras, as you know. And for me, these are the easiest areas to experience physical sensations. And then I look for physical sensations like aching, throbbing, stabbing, stinging, burning, churning, contracting. And they're all painful. And I do the same thing in my throat area and my solar plexus area. Then I'll look at the thoughts that this frightened part of my personality is thinking, and they'll always be judgmental, and critical. So I shouldn't be here. I don't understand this. I'm not as smart as anyone here. Or I don't need to be here. Or I know more than the fellow who's teaching the class. Why am I even here? Or thoughts like, he's so stupid, or I'm so stupid. These are what frightened parts feel and think. And once you know that, you can use your volition, your free will, to move your attention to a loving part of your personality when you were grateful or appreciative or caring or patient and you knew it. Do the same thing. See what it feels like somatically. What thoughts, and the thoughts will always be thoughts of gratitude and appreciation and patience. And then decide to speak and act from the loving part while you're experiencing the frightened part. Now for me, Ken, the power and the beauty of what I heard you sharing is that that's what you did. It's a choice. You learned, for me, emotions are very important in creating authentic power. You used the term mind, but I think you might have been including emotional experiences. And from my perspective, what you did is creating authentic power. You become angry or upset or something activates a frightened part of your personality. And you chose in that moment not to act on it, but to bring into your experience then what you learned in meditation. And not learned is not the right word. Where you went in meditation. And it was a conscious choice to speak and act not from that angry, jealous, resentful part or grieving part, but from a part that's patient and caring and loving. So you, in my experience, have described creating authentic power.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
What if your worst dreams aren't your enemy?
Falling, cheating, being chased, naked, drowning, losing teeth. What if I fail? What if something goes wrong?
I'm Teresa Chung, dream expert, best-selling author, and co-host of The Healing Power of Your Dreams. And in my latest title, Extreme Dreaming, I reveal a powerful truth. There are no bad dreams.
They feel so real, but that's so you remember them.
They're messages, signals, transformative gifts guiding you toward clarity.
Click on the Extreme Dreaming discount banner link on UK Health Radio homepage and learn to decode even your darkest dreams.
Extreme Dreaming.
Are you ready to listen?
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
You know what I love about this conversation is we're really talking about discovering the essence of who we are and what's within us, and it's a place where introspection is the key in this Earth School, from my point of view, to really understand the gifts, the joy, the happiness, everything that's within us, that it's almost we come into this, at least I did, I was socialized into an Earth School that, it's many times along my path, I was self-medicating because I was like, I didn't have tools. I wasn't taught tools originally to deal with it. Mm-hmm. But of course, because of the pain, because of the anxiety and stress, that led me to find the tools. So maybe it was all perfect, but it's an interesting place we live here. I think there's a part here that we're also talking about, which is acceptance. Acceptance of who we are, but acceptance of where we are and what's happening now. Can you speak to that a little bit, the acceptance piece? Mm-hmm.
Depending upon your intention, that can be a very high state, maybe the highest state. I mean, if your intention is, out of hell with it. I'm not having any more to do with it. I just accept it. It's the way it is. Through it. That's not what we're talking about. We're talking about appreciation, gratitude, acceptance with joy. Love is joy. Joy is the revealer of love. It's the revelator. And the opposite, pain is the revelator of fear. So let me not drift from your... You were talking about acceptance. One of the first things my teacher... And my teacher is an angel. And by the way, I was a paratrooper. I wrote a book on quantum physics that won the American Book Award for physics. I graduated from Harvard. I had no patience for any of this stuff. I mean, zero tolerance. And then I met a non-physical entity that stopped me in my tracks with the accuracy of what this benign presence knew about me and no one else could know. And the beneficence and how much I gained from everything that this entity spoke. And I've discovered again and again, especially with the, not especially, also with the angel, that it never tells me what to do. Do this, do that, never. It helps me see my experiences from a new expanded perspective that allows me to be more compassionate and patient and caring than I was before. And this is life in the Earth School. And what I'm learning is to challenge. I'm learning all of the frightened parts of my personality that you mentioned that keep me from loving. It's like this story about Michelangelo, who the wonderful sculptor, who sculpted this 17-foot tall statue of David, the David, in Florence, Firenze. And I've seen this. I watched it while it was still outside. It's inside now, but it's the same thing. It's so, I wanted to reach out and touch it. That skin, how could he do that in marble? How could he possibly put that in marble? And when someone asked him, this is how the story goes. I don't know if this is historical or just someone's beautiful imagination. But Michelangelo in this version said, I saw the David in the block of marble. And I removed everything that prevented it from being seen. I feel that is the creation of authentic power. The love is there. You are love. You don't have love. You aren't loving. You are love. And the distance between what you are and your perception is a measure of the pain in your life. And as you create authentic power, every time you choose to speak or act in love instead of in fear, as you've described you're doing when you choose to apply what you have experienced in meditation in ways that are new or always new when you're doing it for the first time, then you're like each decision, that's how authentic power is created, choice by choice. And each choice is a little tap of the mallet on the chisel and another little piece of marble flies away.
I love it. Well, listen, we're out of time in this segment. We got one more segment we're going to do, you and me, Gary. And, you know, we've touched on some areas that I'd like to take a deeper dive with in our next segment. Things such as the angels, the entities. I'd like to take a much deeper dive into what real authentic love looks like. And also... you know, we've been talking about authentic power. I think you've given some good examples. With authentic power, I'd like to address in the next in our next segment, can a person live pain-free in the Earth School once they tune into their authentic power? So we got a lot of things to cover in our next segment, but I want to just thank you for this segment. This is just really powerful. Thank you for being here.
You're welcome, Ken. I can scarcely believe that we've spoken for an entire segment. I'm looking forward to the next.
You know, somebody said when you're doing things you love, time just flies quickly. And the opposite might be true with the other stuff. So anyway, we'll continue this, and I want to thank my audience for being here. And of course, if you'd like to go to our channel there and give us a subscribe on the YouTube, if you're watching on YouTube today, we'd appreciate that so that you don't miss any episodes also, and pass these episodes to your families and friends and those that you love. All right, till next time.